Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. My name is Alex Croson, and as always, I am here with Mr. Casey Clapp.
That's Funk Master Clapp to you, Alex.
Funk Master Clapp.
You listen to this jam right now?
And the Crotones.
Oh, yeah. It's actually just you're just a bunch of cavemen.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what you dress up as. Obviously, you know, there's a little bit of suspended disbelief there.
A caveman themed funk band, I feel like, is a really appropriate sort of theme.
Don't you think? Could you just imagine, like, none of the musicians they don't make any faces, they don't get into the music, they just look like cavemen up there,
right? I'm thinking sort of cartoonish Fred Flintstone style cavemen.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I like that.
How about this? Funk Master Clap and the Uggs.
And the Uggs. Cavemen wearing very velvety boots.
Okay.
What is Uggs? Where does that come from?
Ugg is like a very tropic,
like a
kind of caveman sound.
See. Yeah. Ugg. I gotcha.
You know.
Well,
I can see it played really well.
Yeah,
with my test audience.
I like the Cronins better.
Cronins, okay.
Yeah.
Crotones,
yes. Yeah. I like the Crotones the best.
Well, Casey, unfortunately, we're not here to talk about funk. We are here to talk about a wildly named, I'm talking scientific name.
Yeah.
Tree.
I'm curious what scientific name you have chosen for this.
Well, you're about to find out, my friend.
Yes, I am.
This is the episode on Alaska yellow cedar.
Correct.
Calotropis nutcatensis.
Ah, I see you chose Calotropis nutcatensis.
Yes.
Interesting choice. Now, can I ask, why did you not choose, say, Camiciparis nutcatensis or Xanthocyparis nutcatensis or Capressus nutcatensis?
Well, Casey, I have a feeling this is a leading question.
No.
Something we'll talk about this episode, potentially.
Yeah,
I see that
this
tree was formally called Cupressus nutcatensis.
I think technically it actually is formally and presently. I think the name you chose is the third most recent name.
Really?
Yeah. We'll definitely talk about it. But this tree its identity has remained functionally the same, but in the background, our scientific naming of it has gone through like 12 changes in the last like 20 years.
This is like a company that makes a good product, but their marketing team are like voracious dogs, and they just keep rebranding even though no one's asking for it.
Yeah, it's exactly that. Like, there's no reason for them to continually choose to do this.
Yeah.
But apparently they are. I actually just had a conversation last night with two listeners. One is new. His name is Topher. The other is an old listener, great fan of the pod, August.
Shout out to Topher and August. I know August.
Yeah, you know August. Mm-hmm. We chatted quite a bit about the naming and should we switch and how deep do we go and is it arbitrary? Is it useful?
Sure.
To whom is it arbitrary? To whom is it useful? these kinds of big questions. So this would go towards that question, and you know, lumping versus splitting versus what does it take to split? What does it take to lump?
It was a
nice conversation.
What does it take to be a lumper?
Yeah, right.
I ask you this,
and we will discuss
after the break. We'll be right back with the Alaska Yellow Cedar, the Yeller Cedar. Right after the break. Completely arbitrary. Hi, everybody. Or should I say, hola a todos. I want you to hear something. It's this. Yes, that is the sound of learning a new language with Babbel. You have, of course, heard of Babbel. You maybe even used Babbel. But if you haven't, Babbel is an app that helps you learn languages. Babbel is a science-backed learning language app that actually works. Let me put it this way. I knew somebody who used a different language app for 365 days and still could not even have basic conversations in the language they were learning on that app. Babbel is not this. They have quick 10-minute lessons and they're handcrafted by 200 language experts. So you can start learning a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Because it's designed by real people for real conversations. In fact, a recent study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. And of course, the best way to learn a new language is immersion. You go and live in the place where the people speak the language you're learning. You speak to the people, they speak back. But the second best way is Babbel. And it's practical. It will very quickly teach you how to order food, ask for directions, speak to shopkeepers without having to consult language apps while you're on vacation. And here is a special limited time deal for our listeners right now. Get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for Fungal Associates at babbel.com/trees. That's right. If you're listening to this, if you're a fan of this show, babbel.com/trees, get 60% off your subscription. That's babbel.com/trees. Rules and restrictions may apply. Adios. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-blooming. Those people are a-walking around. That sun is a-shining. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again. And it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates. Sit on a patio and drink a coffee. Ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted, even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we're talking the Alaska yellow cedar.
Yes, and I actually would like to also switch that. We're going to add more to the namingness of this all.
Oh my God.
So one of my favorite websites, the Gymnosperm Database, as everyone knows, I frequent it often.
I'm more a fan of the sperm database.
Wow.
The Alex. OG.
It's. I guess that is fine. Yeah, you want it to be clothed rather than naked.
Is that Pornhub?
Is that
sperm database?
I guess maybe. Yeah, I don't know if they analyze every sample that is provided, but I don't know.
Why not? Missed opportunity.
Maybe that's how they make a significant amount of their money. Is there actually a science-based porn site?
That's what they call their algorithm.
Yeah, right? Nice. No, Alex, unfortunately not. This is actually a situation where this is very commonly known as the Alaska yellow cedar. Sometimes the Alaskan yellow cedar.
And we are hyphenating, by the way.
Yes.
Yellow and cedar.
Correct. This is not a true cedar in the genus Cedrus. This is a false cedar in one of many genuses. Regardless of what the genus is, it is in the family Cupressaceae.
Uh-huh.
So that... It is not really a yellow tree. There's no reason that it's called yellow cedar, other than maybe the wood might have a little bit of a tinge to it.
That was my best guess.
It's not even really significant. Like, oh, I have the wood book next to me right now. It is not a tree that's like substantially yellow.
To be fair, most wood has some yellow in it.
Exactly. So it's like it doesn't stand out, you know. Yeah. If everything is the same color, then if you call one thing that color, it's not standing out.
Right. It needs to be like straight up yellow.
Yes, exactly. And it's also not really particularly Alaskan.
Like,
it grows in Alaska, but if you were really to say, well, where does this tree grow most? It would be probably BC.
Curious.
The number one place. But it also grows in the Cascades and the Olympics and then down to the Siskiyous and some mountains here and there down in southern Oregon, Northern California.
I like to think that that's an American thing. It's like, where does this tree grow? Canada? No. What's the closest way? Alaska.
Interesting. Well, we do have things we call the Canada this or the Canada that.
That's true, Casey. But, you know, I was making a joke.
Wow. Your joke sounded like a very pointed point, Alex.
It's a dry wit.
Oh, I see. All right. A dry wit. Well, so in the database here,
yes.
they prefer to call it the Nootka cypress.
Okay, is that a place?
It is. Nootka is a sound. There's a Nootka sound. Apparently, it's also named after a people.
Mm-hmm. It sounds indigenous. It also sounds expressly Canadian and indigenous, like Inuit.
Yeah, I guess so, because it is kind of for the further north up there. But I don't think that it's particularly Arctic in a specific sense.
Okay.
According to the Wood Book, it's actually named for the Nuchanulth people of Canada.
Okay.
But I've also read that it's from Nootka Sound, which is also an indigenous term. So either way, that's what it comes down to.
Kind of comes to the same place.
Yeah. And so that is, that's what they prefer to call it. So I kind of like that too. It throws back to the indigenous people that would be working with it in this area.
Yeah.
It also, as they say in this, it is neither Alaskan specifically or yellow specifically. So the name Alaska yellow cedar seems completely out of nowhere.
This is a Harry Carey moment.
The
Alaskan yellow cedar is neither Alaskan nor yellow. Discuss.
Not Harry Carey.
Wait, who was that?
That's the old Jewish ladies, Mike Myers.
Oh, shit,
and
that's
someone
right.
else. Yeah,
that's right.
They get fushnicket when that's when they have to have you discuss things.
Right.
That's my favorite. I love
Pardon
that
me.
So much.
You are the SNL historian of the two of us.
Yeah, well, thank you. I do. That was one of the eras that I got into it first, was right when they were doing that.
Oh,
stuff.
Yeah.
That's one of my very first sketches, I think, that I saw.
A classic era.
It's very classic.
Well, Casey, let's imagine, as we do every episode, that you and I are traipsing. Let's say we're snowshoeing.
Yeah.
through the Nootka Sound.
Yeah.
And I accidentally slipped into a creek and I'm dying of frostbite.
Uh-oh.
Hypothermia,
then,
not,
and then
not
in
frostbite.
The, in the moment you say, Casey, as I die, as I lay here, I must know what that tree is.
Let's ID that tree.
Well, I'll talk to no one now because Alex has perished. So,
ooh, I get to go to lunch.
This is the Alaska cypress, or the Nootka cypress. I have always called it Alaska yellow cedar, so it's probably going to come back to me very constantly. However, so this is a tall-growing evergreen coniferous tree. Mm. As we noted, it is the genus has been switched around to several different things. The most common one now, which we'll talk about why this is the choice that I'm sticking with, is Cupressus nootkatensis.
Okay.
Cupressus nootkatensis is the Nootka cypress growing up in this area, Nootka Sound. So as you're walking around, you'll find this tree growing at either higher elevations as you go further south or all the way down to the sea level if you're up further north. It's like in Alaska, in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
It's evergreen, has scale-like leaves. And the thing that I love about scale-like leaves is that the closer you look, the better you can kind of tell them apart and see exactly what the differences are. Because normally people see the scale-like leaves and they're like, oh, I can't. They look all the same. This one looks just like that one, looks just like that one, looks just like that one.
You mean on a single tree?
No, on all trees. Like if you compare the scale-like leaved trees to each other.
Sure. The only difference I know of is like the all mutation,
yeah, there
or whatever.
You go. Yeah, so what you're talking about, Alex, is the scale-like leaves would either be firmly pressed to the little twig,
yeah,
or maybe the tip would kind of pull back and be keeled is the term, where
keeled.
They have like a little point on it.
Okay.
Yeah. So that is the case. You have usually scale-like leaves would be just completely oppressed to the little tiny twigs.
Right.
They just literally look like scales, like what you would imagine a scale looks like, as opposed to having the awl shape that kind of pops off, because that is kind of the transition between actually having the normal needle-like or linear leaves, or what they're called. So yeah, it's more of a spectrum, right?
Okay.
Luckily, the tree we're talking about today, the spectrum is mostly on the scale side. It has the tiniest bit of kind of pull back from the tips, but it's not anywhere near what you'd say, oh, that's awl like.
Okay.
Nowhere near it.
Just a little space under the scale.
Yeah, just a little space. It kind of pulls back, maybe like it's kind of, you know, laying in bed and it needs to pull its head up a little bit just to be kind of like, oh, someone here.
I see it here. It looks very like, it looks like instead of the scales being like totally flush with the stem.
Yeah.
It looks like they just like are kind of like the tips of each one is sitting on top of the base of the next.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, that's exactly right. They're very imbricate in that way. They're kind of layered one on top of the other.
That's right.
And they are also oppositely arranged. So there are two that are on the top and the bottom of a twig, and then there are two on the lateral sides, left and right.
Interesting.
And they are oppositely arranged down that entire twig. So imagine just having those two. It's like stacking chairs or something, where because they look exactly like the one above and below, they just go whoop, 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 and just kind of fit very nicely amongst each other.
That does sound nice.
Yeah, it makes for a very attractive looking piece of foliage. So that is the main thing you're going to be looking for. And I should note, there are no white stomatal lines along these twigs.
Well, this is curious. I was going to ask you, because I'm looking at these photos.
Yeah.
It looks like these twigs have sort of an X-shaped pattern down them of white lines.
Ah, so you may not be looking at the right photo, Alex.
Well, fuck me.
Well, that seems like a pretty extreme response.
I'm looking at this photo is entitled Camecyparis.
Ah, Camecyparis.
Camecyparis.
Yeah.
Nootkatensis.
Okay.
So is this that tree?
That officially would be correct.
I'm telling you, Case, it's got white X's down it. But maybe that's just like the, you know, the off side of the needle, of the scale, rather.
It's not really. And here's why.
Look
Alex.
At it. Come over here and look at it. Look at this.
All right. Hold on, everyone.
Casey, we're breaking form. Casey's walking over to my computer. This is the photo. Casey looked at it. He's trying to think of a way to talk himself out of this corner he's painted in.
So here's the thing. Here's the thing, Alex. I want you to go to the first link that we have, which is always usually to the landscape plants of the College of Agricultural Sciences, Department of Horticulture, Oregon State University.
Okay.
And scroll on down to this. It's the Calitropsis nutcatensis is what they call it. And then down the very bottom, they have a link that says, click here for a table of distinguishing characteristics between the Port Orford cedar, Camiciparis lawsoniana, and our Calitropsis, or what used to be called Camiciparis nutcatensis, the Alaska yellow cedar.
Okay.
And it will compare two photos and give some lists of what exactly separates these trees. So the reason why I'm dubious is because the Port Orford cedar has really explicit X markings of the white stomatal lines on the underside, which is exactly what you're describing. Whereas the Alaska cedar or our Nootka cypress does not have those X's. The white X's are essentially a little bit of stomatal bloom between the boundaries between where one leaf ends and the next starts.
Right.
So on the Port Orford cedar, those are really obvious. On the Alaska cedar, they are absent. So sometimes you could see them, but I would be wondering if that is a white stomatal line or if it's more just kind of the lighter green edge of the leaf, you know?
It's the off green that looks kind of white.
Gotcha. Well, I guess
I'm positive that's what it is.
Okay. And I think you're right, which is why I was like, huh. And I didn't immediately say, you're wrong or I'm wrong. Because right. I think in this case, we're both correct. We just have to dial in exactly what we're seeing.
You know, there's a lesson here.
There is a lesson here. Don't jump to conclusions. Yeah. Work with your friends.
Hey.
And come to a conclusion that works for both of you.
Wow, that's really nice.
Yeah.
Compromise.
Well done, you guys.
Let's call it a, you know, you shake hands with a tree?
Yeah.
Let's say we are fur friends.
Oh, we're fur friends for sure. Well, my fur friend, that is the thing that I would look for. But there's another trick to help us with this identification.
My fur friend.
is that a sad song by Johnny Cash?
Yes, and the Nine Inch Nails.
Exactly. There you go. So the Nootka cypress is a tree that is known for growing upright, as of course we know. Some of the biggest ones, which I was actually kind of stunned about, get up to about 130 feet tall. The tallest was just at 200 feet.
Dang.
So far that we've measured.
That's impressive.
Yeah, pretty good. That's like 61 meters tall for you up there in Canada and everywhere else in the world that makes the right decision to choose metric. And it gets to almost 13 or 14 feet in diameter. Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
Some of the biggest ones. They're huge.
13 feet in diameter.
Yeah.
That's a big boy.
It's a big boy.
Oh my God.
And so as these trees are growing up, they have one central stem, but their branches are very quintessentially kind of out and then tip up at the ends.
This is curious. We have another debate here.
Really?
A lot of the pictures I'm seeing are of a weeping variety.
Now see, Alex, look at the branches versus the little twigs and branchlets. The branches themselves come out and will tip up a little bit at the end, but they are draped with foliage coming straight down.
I see that now.
Okay, yeah.
It's so, we've talked about like carrying shopping bags.
Exactly. Yeah. I imagine like you're holding up a sheet or something that's draped over the top of you.
Yeah.
So that is the way to tell these apart is that they have these long drooping branchlets off of these more or less kind of upswept branches. And the whole canopy is very skinny. It does not get big. It doesn't get very full. It is a very gaunt looking tree.
Mm.
As opposed to the Port Orford cedar, it gets very bushy and it's a very dense canopy. It also has a somewhat droopy appearance, but not near as like elongated. You know, like you see someone, you say, oh, well, why the long face? Like, oh, you have a horse has a long face.
Sure.
This is our tree is the long-faced tree, whereas the Port Orford cedar has a short face.
I think I understand.
Yes. All right. That's great. This is a short face tree, everyone. You get it?
So much of this ID is in comparison to this other species.
Well, mostly I'm just doing that to make sure that we're comparing the things that you might be seeing online.
Okay.
Because sadly, these are very tough trees to tell apart if you don't know exactly what you're looking for.
I gotcha.
So if you just look up this thing, someone will say, oh yeah, there's that tree. And they can think they see this thing and that thing. But because they're so comparable or so easily confused, I'm just trying to set that.
I understand, Casey. Thank you for taking those precautions. There is a lot of tree misinformation online.
There really is.
And a lot of plant and misinformation in general.
People are going to need to learn how to... What is it? It's internet... what is the term that we're teaching kids?
Oh, literacy?
Literacy. Thank you. Internet literacy. Know what is real and what is not.
Yes. And the problem is a lot of people say things very confidently that are wrong.
Yeah. Put it on their website.
I understand the irony in that me saying that because I'm on a podcast and all podcasters do this.
Only 70% of the time.
You put a microphone in front of anybody, they're going to say something that's incorrect.
That's probably accurate. Yeah. I've certainly done it.
Oh, sure. Let's talk cones, Case.
The cones are adorable little cones. They are globose or very circular. They're like little tiny globes.
Mm-hmm. And peltate.
That's right, Alex. They are shield-like scales.
Yes.
There are 4 to 6 peltate scales that are coming out on this little teeny tiny globe. It's maybe 1/2 inch long, not very big at all.
You know, this is each cone scale has a little point in the center.
Yes, it does.
Which works really well for peltate because it reminds me of those shields. I think maybe they were Roman or Greek, like gladiatorial shields that had a spike in the center.
I didn't know that.
They look just like
them. Jam it into someone?
Yeah.
Hardcore, man.
Yeah, man.
Well, this is exactly it. These are armed shields.
Yes. Is that considered an armed umbo?
You know, I don't think so.
Okay.
Because, not botanically, but morphologically speaking, I've in fact been told by a book that these are more technically bracts rather than true scales. So I think in a technical sense, you might be able to get away with it, but I've not heard anything call it an umbo,
okay.
An armed umbo. It's only been used for things in the pine family.
Like a coulter pine.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, or a ponderosa pine. Yeah. Like the two sitting next to you there have little points.
Yeah, right. So I can 100% say yes, okay. But you might have something there.
Hey, maybe it's hyphenated.
It might be, yes, a hyphenated umbo. Good one. So So when you find these, they'll be hanging at the end of these long sprays of foliage, and they'll mature in about 2 years. Sometimes in the best conditions, they'll mature in a single year.
Wow.
And they are little tiny circles that kind of open up, kind of like there's an example of something in some sci-fi that I'm thinking of.
I know what you're thinking of.
What is it?
I don't know exactly, but continue. Sorry.
Yeah, it's like a sphere that kind of like blows itself up and opens.
Yeah.
And then there's like you can see inside and do things.
Yes.
It's kind of like that, except the inside is just filled with a bunch of seeds.
I want to say it's like a key to something. Like somebody's holding it in their palm and it sort of like opens up.
Yeah. Exactly. That's what this looks like.
Yes, totally.
We're on the same page, Alex.
Hell yeah.
So that's this little cone. It's adorable, and they are filled with little tiny seeds that kind of float off. They don't get too far away, so they kind of create these little groves, and they just expand ever so slightly.
Okay.
Beautiful trees.
No hardcore dispersal method happening here?
No, not really. Just nothing sort of too intense.
Spray and pray.
Exactly. They're just like, you know what? Here you go. There's a seed over there. Good luck, you guys.
Well, that is our Alaska yellow cedar. Or we're going with Nootka cedar.
Yeah, whatever.
Nootka cypress.
Whatever the term is that comes to mind first.
Okay.
Go for it.
It's a word map.
It is.
And you just select two.
Yeah.
And exactly. You can just mix and match.
The Alaska yellow Nootka
cedar.
Whatever you want.
Cypress. Mm-hmm.
You can also choose Cambycyprus, Calitropsis, Xanthocyparis.
Oh my gosh.
Whatever you want.
It's so creative.
Yeah, this is really a choose your own name adventure, is really what it is. Well, There's one last thing. We want to talk about this bark real fast.
Oh, gosh.
The bark of this tree is delightful, Alex.
Well, let's talk about it.
It's very flaky and fibrous looking and very gray.
Mm.
So it kind of does not maintain a really intense fibrousness in a long kind of intense furrows or anything like that. It kind of looks like it's starting to flake off all the time really soon. And what's curious about this is that it doesn't really, like, it doesn't appear to be super intolerant of fire. It doesn't appear to be super tolerant of fire.
Hmm.
So the bark, I think, is just kind of fancy looking utility bark. I don't think it necessarily gets thick.
Utility plus.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of utility plus. It's like that you paid to add a fancy skin to it.
I would love to give a descriptor here for this bark that we've never used before.
Ooh, please.
This bark looks like zombie flesh.
Wow.
That's like sloughing off.
Ooh, and like gray and dead.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And a couple of the photos here look a little red.
Yeah, there's a little bit in it. It gets a little bit more red, like maybe if it's newer. That's about it.
Okay.
Wow, that's a good one. Wow. Rough.
Zombie flesh.
Sick. Well, that's our tree. You'll find it in the forest near you as long as you're either at high elevations in the south or low elevations in the north.
Interesting.
It's a gorgeous tree. I love seeing this tree planted all over the place, especially west of the Cascades, as a horticulture tree, because it grows fairly slowly, but it also doesn't get very like massive even when it does grow, especially in the kind of garden space. But it has a very attractive, compact, very shaggy form, so people think it looks very attractive as a kind of statement piece. Or it just counts as a tree, so they plant it, and they're like, great, that is a tree we're not going to have to worry about. It's not going to grow too big. It's not going to grow too fast.
I see.
But it counts as a tree.
Kind of just takes care of itself.
Yeah, exactly.
Case, what does the hort in horticulture mean?
It means plant, I think, of some kind.
Okay. So yeah. Horticulture is like gardens and yards and things?
Uh-huh, yeah. Okay. Well, it's mostly just it's planting for kind of sales, I guess. So it's a good question, Alex. I think to contrast it with, say, agriculture, mm-hmm. where you're growing the plants specifically for food,
yeah.
horticulture is not necessarily growing a plant particularly for food.
Okay.
Could be for something else.
I got you.
Most of the time, it's aesthetics.
Cool.
Yeah, there you go. Horticulture. That's a very good question. Thanks. I don't know what hort officially comes from, though, in terms of the etymology.
Well, I'll look it up while you continue the story of the Alaska yellow cedar.
Well, that sounds great. So one thing I wanted to touch on just before we get too far is discussing the fact that this tree is one of the progenitors of a tree that I find despicable. And someone just recently requested that we cover this tree. We're not going to do it because it's a hybrid. And we've only done one hybrid, and we talked about what does it mean to be a hybrid. And there, we've drawn the line.
What was the hybrid we covered?
Until we're going to go back. That was the London plane tree.
That's a hybrid?
Yes, it's a hybrid between the American sycamore and a European sycamore that kind of grows in the east of Europe.
How about that?
Yeah. So, hybrid, London plane tree, Platanus X acerifolia.
Okay.
So, the tree that is a hybrid between the Nootka cypress and the Monterey cypress mm-hmm. is one we commonly know as the Leyland cypress or the Leland cypress.
Oh, sure. Actually, Casey,
yes.
The Leland cypress was the tree that you assigned to, I think it was Buzz Lightyear in last week's family tree segment.
That's right, Alex. Good point.
Yeah, I knew it sounded familiar.
Well, so here's the thing. Buzz Lightyear aside, that tree can just go fuck right off.
Wow.
I just don't want to see any more Leyland cypress.
Okay. It's an overplanting situation?
Oh, it is overplanted to such a degree. It just makes you sad. Here's why. It's the new arborvita, essentially.
Oh, boy.
So people plant it all over the place because it's a very fast-growing tree that you can go wink, 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 wink and turn into a hedge in 10 minutes.
Sure.
The problem is, they have what we've talked about before, hybrid vigor, where they grow like 3 feet in a year.
Oh, wow.
Like they just get
damn
massive.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So they grow really fast. You turn around and you're like, oh, what's that over there? And you look back at your hedge and it's 3 feet taller.
Wow.
So people plant it, but then they just kind of leave it and they don't pay attention to it and they don't continue to prune it, and it can get out of hand in no time.
Of course.
So that is, you know, it's a pretty big issue. You don't want that. The roots tend to not develop very well, so it'll become like an 80-foot tall tree in no time. Like, they'll get giant and it'll do it very fast. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of falls over and decays sometimes. Like, the roots don't really take care of themselves.
It's like a Great Dane.
Yes.
Big, beautiful dogs, and they live for like 6 years.
Yeah. And it's like, Jesus, okay, what are we going to do with that? Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. It's just rough. The hybrid vigor's good. It's just not, it's just, it comes with a downfall, I think.
Hey, you know, right tree, right place, Casey.
Yes. So people are planting them. They're available all the time, but they're also like cheap as hell. So they are also being planted very consistently in landscapes because someone's like, well, we got to plant a tree. If we plant a big evergreen, then we'll get a little bit more points. What's the cheapest, biggest evergreen we can plant? Oh, there it is. It's this fancy looking Leland cypress.
So a listener requested that we cover the Leland cypress?
Yes. Okay. And, or at least maybe they just wanted to hear us talk about it.
So, oh, sure.
Here you go.
Well, there you are.
Dumb tree. Don't plant it. Get a better tree. The parent, Arnica cypress, fine choice.
I got you.
But it also hybridizes with two other cypresses from the south. One is Cupressus lusitanica. The other is Cupressus glabra. One is down in Mexico. Then there's also the tree we just talked about, which is Macrocarpa, which is the Monterey cypress. It grows just on the coast in Monterey, California. Then the last one is an Arizona cypress that grows down in the mountains of Arizona.
Hmm.
So historically, and this goes back to our naming thing, so I promise this will be the last of it, and then this will tie a nice little bow on top of what we're talking about.
I can't wait.
This is a tree that initially was in the Camiciparis genus. Then it hybridized with a Cupressus genus tree. So because it hybridized, that made people think, wait a second, if this tree hybridizes so ridiculously easily with three other cypresses, I got a feeling this might be a cypress.
Right.
Because Camiciparis trees shouldn't hybridize with cypress trees. Their genus should be different enough that they're not actually so closely related that if you just put them in the same room, they will fornicate. You know what I mean?
Do genera usually not hybridize with each other across genre lines?
Exactly. It's okay. One of the kind of particular things that defines a genre.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Yeah, because the genre would be, these are all the spruces. The spruces do not hybridize with the pines. The pines do not hybridize with the Douglas firs.
But each of those hybridizes with themselves among the genus.
Potentially, okay. Yeah. So that was one of these big things. So then they started looking back into it and saying, well, okay, this isn't really quite a Camiciparis, so we're going to change that to Calitropsis. Then someone was like, Calitropsis doesn't quite do it right because there's a couple other species of that. So this one needs its own name, Xanthocyparis. We're going to call it Xanthocyparis nutcatensis.
Xanthocyparis.
Yes. It's been that for a long time.
Wow.
And then recently someone was like, no, this is, and it must be a cypress because it hybridizes with other cypresses. It looks like them, except the cone is just a little bit smaller. So they have now decided this is a cypress tree, and that's what I'm going to go with because that came out, I think, in 2010. They finally decided that.
The cone is a little smaller. Don't all trees have different size cones?
Yeah. But this one, the cone looks just like the Port Orford cedar, for example.
Like a cedar cone, like a small little cedar cone?
Yes, a small little circle cone.
Yeah.
It looks just like the Camiciparis cones. It does not look super similar to a cypress cone.
Which are a little bigger.
Yes.
But the same kind of shape.
Yeah, same kind of shape.
A cypress cone is like a blown up cedar cone.
It is, yeah. And usually it's a little bit smoother on the outside. This one's a little bit rough and has that little point.
I gotcha.
So this is all the things that all of the namers of things are dealing with.
Interesting.
But right now it is done and we're set and we're saying this is just a normal hybrid or normal tree with normal hybrids between other species, which is something that all of the cypresses do, at least over here in the West, very, very often.
Yeah.
So that is to end it.
Okay.
So that's why there's so many different names. It has to do with what it hybridizes with, what it creates, which is stupid, and then all the other things that happen.
Well, Casey, now that we've come to a clean ending,
yeah,
perhaps we should take a short intermission so that I can tell you what hort means.
Oh, please, yeah.
A little anticlimactic.
For a second, I thought you were going to just move on with the show. And I was like, Alex, we haven't actually talked about what we're meaning to talk about here.
Alex is done. Horticulture comes from the 1670s.
Okay.
It just means the cultivation of a garden.
All right.
Coined from the Latin hortus, which is garden.
So there you go. Explicitly garden.
Yeah.
As opposed to not garden or garden for food, I guess. This is like aesthetic garden.
Right. And it says it's probably on the model of agriculture.
Yes, that's what I think too. Like, yeah. Same thing with arboriculture. Alex, we're not here to talk about culture. We're here to talk about wood.
Well, Casey, let's talk wood. Now, I seem to recall, as the keeper of the notes of this episode, that we talked about wood a couple weeks ago.
We sure did.
What did we talk about?
We talked about the northern red oak.
That's right.
And how its wood works, it being an angiosperm.
Aha.
And the thing that we mostly talked about is how a tree puts on wood and reacts to different things.
Right, and how wood is composed.
Yeah, exactly. So we initially covered the xylem of a tree, which is the woody section that is a part of the cambium, right?
Yeah.
So the wood is the inside section of that. The xylem, being the Greek for wood, that is the part that is moving water and dissolved nutrients up from the ground out to the rest of the tree.
Right.
It also is the thing that makes all of the wood, the actual rings of the tree. So that is the cambium layer that grows inwards. And then there's the phloem, which is on the outside. And that is what takes things down and grows outwards from this cambium layer.
Got it.
So it'll take all the sugars and starches downwards. Well, we say down, but it moves it from the outside exterior bits of the tree to the main stem, down to the roots, and then if it goes up, it's in the xylem. Of course, you think about it, that phloem flows down, mm-hmm. if you think about a trunk.
And do you remember my mnemonic device for xylem?
No, I don't. I remember that you had one, but I don't remember exactly what it is.
So the most fun thing to do on a xylophone is go... Brrrr.
That's right, you're going up. That's yep. right. Oh, Alex, I love that. Xylophone. Which is great. Xylophone also means a wooden instrument, right?
That's right.
There you go. So that is the thing we talked about mostly. And we also discussed a little bit about how trees decide where to put on the wood in this this layer. We noted that angiosperms have pores or vessels, which if you're looking at the end grain, you can see these big circles, and that's kind of the main thing that the tree uses to move things up and down, right?
Yeah, within the wood itself.
Exactly. So this time, we are talking about the same kind of vascular system, the vascular cambium, the xylem, which is, of course, those same tissues we just talked about, and the phloem. The difference is in conifer wood, in the wood of gymnosperms, it is significantly different. They are doing the same things, but with a different group of cells and a different organization system.
Wood in conifers is different than wood in broadleaf trees?
Substantially.
This is wild.
Isn't that crazy?
Well, I know that broadleaf trees are considered hardwood and yeah. conifers are like softwood.
Exactly.
So is that sort of the broad stroke difference?
Yeah.
At least the surface level difference?
Kind of, but that's okay. It's very much exactly surface level, where they're yeah. just essentially saying, yeah, we got these two big broad things. It's like broadleaf versus, needle-like leaf.
Yeah, yeah.
There's going to be exceptions on both sides for all these things, or evergreen deciduous, you know?
Sure, sure, yeah.
So that is essentially what we're getting at, but it actually goes more down to a fundamental level of how the wood is constructed.
Interesting.
What is there and what is not?
Let's hear it.
Well, the big difference is that in conifers, they do not have these vessels, these pores that you'd see on the end grain that all these angiosperm trees have.
Hmm.
They actually have what's called resin ducts and tracheids.
Wow.
Isn't that fun terms?
I believe these are new to me.
Nice. All right. I'll define tracheids first.
Okay.
Tracheids, and that is spelled T-R-A-C-H-E-I-D-S.
Yes.
Tracheids.
Like trachea.
Exactly like trachea.
Oh.
Alex is like, ah.
I stumbled upon it.
You've stumbled upon it. They are long tubes that go up and down, which is longitudinally with the stem of the tree. So, of course, if a branch is coming out and, you know, they're going horizontally.
Sure.
They grow out, and 90% of wood is made up of these tracheids.
Hmm.
And they are the vascular stuff that moves things up and down.
Okay.
So in the sapwood, which is the first, the most recent several rings of a tree, they are the pipes that are storing some things like dissolved nutrients and water, the sap and that kind of stuff. They are also moving that up and down. So they are the quintessential sapwood, where they are part of that xylem tube system moving these things up.
Okay.
They are made up of cellulose, and they have big, intense cell walls. As those cells die, those cell walls stay there and stay rigid and then become the heartwood later as more rings get put on.
Sure.
So they are the structural bits of these trees, 100%.
We've talked about how heartwood, I bring this up all the time, because I like the analogy.
Yeah.
But heartwood is like retired sapwood.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't work anymore.
Nope.
But it's just relaxing in the center of the tree.
Exactly. It's gotten itself filled up with all the different stuff to make it decay resistant, and it just sits there and holds up everybody else.
Much like our elders.
Much like our elders. Thank you, elders. So the other thing that we discussed just now is a resin duct.
Yes.
What I love about a resin duct is that they are not a thing in and of themselves, as in the pores or vessels, which is a cell that is a pore or a vessel. And I'm saying or vessel because they're both the same thing. Pore equals vessel.
A pore is a vessel?
Yeah, pore, P-O-R-E.
Yeah, yeah. Like a pore on your face.
Exactly,
your
skin.
Okay.
So they're just two different terms for the same thing.
Okay.
Most people know them as vessels, but apparently the more proper term would be pore.
Okay.
So in conifers, they have tracheids that do all that work, and they are the structural, they are vascular system. The resin duct are spaces that are created in between cells. They look like these circular spaces, but they are not an actual living cell. They are just spaces between living cells, and the cells that border it will secrete resin into the duct.
I'm sort of imagining like a hotel hallway. Like you have the hotel rooms.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But then there's the hallway that kind of moves everybody up and down the hotel.
That's perfect. And then every now and then the people, you know, either the hotel rooms will then push all of this resin into the this hallway so that, you know, it can go away somewhere.
Hotel resin, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think we know what you mean. We saw that at the beginning of the show. So these resin ducts will act as a system to move resin. And remember, resin is different than sap. Resin is that that very intense liquidy kind of thing. It's very viscous, so it doesn't move quickly.
Okay.
And it comes from the wood, from these ducts.
Uh-huh.
It does not have anything to do with the sap, which the sap is the watery stuff that's moving up and down the tree that's filled with nutrients and things.
Is it also filled with resin?
No.
Okay.
Resin is from the wood only. I think if there's a resin duct there or a fusiform cell, a fusiform ray cell, then that would be a spot where the resin is going kind of radially out from the middle of the tree.
Okay.
Connecting with these ducts that are going up and down in the tree.
So if you touch some freshly chopped wood and it's sticky.
Yes.
That's resin.
Exactly.
If you tap into a sugar maple and it flows out to make maple syrup, that is sap.
Correct. Exactly. So those are the big like right in your face differences of the wood of a conifer versus an angiosperm. Angiosperms do not make resin in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
They make sap, which is like you just noted, all the delicious maple syrups and different sap things that you get.
Yeah.
Whereas resins are made by conifers in these resin ducts, and they are specifically used to protect the tree if it gets damaged.
Okay.
Now, some don't actually have it, I should note.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, just to throw a crazy, you know,
wrench in the works.
Thank you. I was like, throw a ring into something. Like, huh? Just to throw a wrench into it all. Some conifers don't have any resin ducts at all.
You know what I like more than wrench in the works?
What?
A stick in the spokes.
Stick in the spokes, yes. Yeah. Throw a stick in your spokes, Alex. Stop you in your tracks and flip you over.
Resin ducts exist only in conifers.
Yes.
Or gymnosperms.
Yes, correct. Okay.
I think, you know, we're 2 years into this podcast, two and a half.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I'm to the point where I'm like, I've kind of resigned to the fact that, like, I don't think I'll ever remember which group is gymno and which group is angio.
Oh, really?
Do you have a mnemonic device? I never, ever, ever get it right. I have a 50% chance every time. And I hit tails.
I did not know that.
So do you have a mnemonic device for gymno versus angio?
Yes, I have a mnemonic device.
Okay.
It is gym, which means naked, right? From like ancient Greek. A gymnasiums where you go work out and you'd be naked.
Nude with your buddies and do some push-ups.
Throw a discus or whatever they did. Yeah, exactly.
Throw a discus. Use a sling to knock a pot off a pedestal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You know, standard Greek gymnasium stuff.
Your ancient Greek exercise stuff.
Yeah. So that is the naked seed, right? So gymnosperm means naked seed.
Okay.
So I just remember that the naked means there is no ovary, which is what the angiosperm has. And an ovary that is mature is a fruit.
Okay. So, okay. So naked being that it's just sitting in that cone.
It's just sitting on.
It's exposed. It's
sitting on that scale. It's not within anything.
I guess I mix that up because, like, I think of cones as sort of de facto fruit.
Yeah, I think that's fair. They are de facto fruit.
But they are not botanical fruit.
No. Botanically, they are fruit. It's just they are not, they don't have an ovary around the seed.
But is not a fruit defined as a mature ovary?
It is. It is in that case. So I guess, yeah, maybe it's a lowercase f because we also use it with like a mushroom, the fruiting body of a mushroom.
Yeah.
Is that so?
I like this lowercase, uppercase kind of thing. I think you're right, Case. Okay. A cone is a lowercase fruit.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
And a pear is like a, you know,
uppercase fruit. Yeah. It's pretty good. I like pears. What am I saying?
I think your mnemonic device here, which is just the etymology, will work for me, Casey.
Okay. All right. Otherwise, gymnosperm, conifer. Just remember that, and that's
great.
As long as you can remember that, then
that's
all you got.
That's the problem. I cannot remember that.
Well, okay, think about conifer is the shorter of the two words between conifer and broadleaf.
Mm-hmm.
Gymnosperm is shorter than angiosperm.
Okay.
So long words go together, shorter words go together. Do you need any more, Alex? I can help out for days.
The first one was good, like
Thank
I said.
Anyway,
here's three more that are worse.
Well, that's all I can provide for you.
Okay, perfect, Casey. Thank you.
But if you want to know and you're like, you know what? I need a mnemonic device that I can see and feel. Go cut down a tree and then look at the wood. If it has a resin duct, you can be like, oh yeah, totally. This is a conifer. That's a gymnosperm.
Yes.
If it doesn't, then see if it has vessels. If it has no vessels, no resin ducts, probably still a conifer.
It'll cost you a tree, but you'll remember.
You're going to remember it. That is an issue with our format, though, obviously. We can't show very many visual references.
Sure.
We can just say, go to www.ourwebsite.com.
Yeah.
And then we'll have the links.
I think that's the reason you and I have gotten so good at visual metaphors, Casey.
Yeah, it has. Good for us, right?
Yeah.
Well, so the last bit about how trees, conifers specifically.
Gymnosperms.
Thank you, Alex. Do their wood thing is, in contrast to angiosperms, they will put on wood on the compression side. I think we've talked about this a few times.
Yeah, we've talked about compression versus
tensile.
EQ.
Yes, exactly. Correct. You got it.
Tensile side or strength. Compression strength versus tensile strength.
Exactly. Or tension.
Right. Or tension. Yes. Yes. Okay. Compression and tension.
And the way I like to talk about this is if you put out your arm
and
you have your palm face down. So your hand is perfectly horizontal. If someone comes and pushes on your middle finger and you just kind of bend your arm down a little bit, the top of your arm is being pulled. So that is in tension.
Right. In order to balance that out, you're pulling up, right?
Yes. Yeah. So the top of your muscles, as we noted a couple weeks ago, all of your muscles are always working by pulling. None of your muscles push.
Right. Fascinating.
Yeah. So if someone pushes on your hand to push it down, the muscles on top are pulling because they are in tension.
That's right. I'm almost imagining like a barn raising or something. Like they tie ropes to the top of the barn when it's on the ground.
Yeah.
And they pull the ropes to lift the barn, the side of the barn up.
That works perfectly. Yeah. That's exactly how it is. Now, I should note the opposite side of this. So underneath your arm, if you were a piece of wood, that would all be in compression.
Right.
So this is, there's really a couple good diagrams you can find out on the internet. I'll see if I can find one. We'll post it on the on our link here. So the idea is as you bend a piece of wood or a living branch, the underside is going to be all those cells pushing against each other. That's in compression. And all the ones on top are going to be pulling away from each other.
Okay.
Conifers will have response growth that puts wood on the compression side of whatever's getting affected.
Hmm.
We, a couple weeks ago, were talking about two trees growing right next to each other and how one would be leaning away from the more dominant tree.
Yeah.
That one, if it's a broadleaf angiosperm tree, then it's putting on tension wood to help do like what you're talking about, that barn raising, where it's putting on all the ropes on the tension side to hold up all the weight.
Right.
Conifers do the exact opposite, where they put compression wood and they say, hold on, I'm going to push this up. And then they put more wood on the side that's in compression.
That is so curious.
Isn't that very curious?
Wow.
Yeah.
So we talked about, you know, if you cut into a big limb off of a main stem, the sort of heartwood of the limb will probably not be in the direct center.
Gotcha. Yo, you like the pith as well.
The pith. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
100%.
Heartwood is just in the main stem.
Well, it's in both. Yeah. If you get a big enough branch, sure, it'll have some heartwood.
I think what I meant was pith.
Okay. Yeah.
So the pith of that limb won't be in the exact center of the cross section.
Yes.
It will be, say, a little bit to the top side, which means on a conifer or gymnosperm, because gym means nude. the wood, there will be more wood on the bottom side of the pith than on the top side,
exactly,
because that's how they grow compression wood.
That's it.
But on a broadleaf tree, or an angiosperm,
means covered.
Covered. Oh. My friend Angie wears many layers of clothing.
Yeah, she always has closed-toed covered shoes.
Yes.
Not a sandals fan, Angie.
Angie hates sandals. That would, on that cross-section, the pith will probably be toward the bottom because they're putting on tensile wood
precisely
on top.
Yes, that is their general form of response.
That is so fucking weird.
You got it perfect.
Why is that? Is that just the way it grows?
It's just
Casey
the way it grows.
Casey threw up comically shrugged.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it just goes back to that split we kind of talked about, right?
Yeah.
Is that there's these trees make resin ducts. These ones do not.
Right.
These ones put wood on this side. These trees do it on this side. These ones have tracheids. These ones have pores or vessels. So that's it. So it's this is a conifer, our tree that we're talking about today.
Yeah.
Our Nootka cypress, if that's what you are.
Wow.
If that's your real name.
Yeah.
So that is a classic example of a conifer that would be doing this kind of thing, building its wood in just ever so slightly a different way than its cohorts on the other side of the aisle.
Wow. You will. And of course, you have the added layer of this tree sort of, I'm going to say, Oh, how's this? Oh my God, how's this for a new tree term, Casey?
All right.
Genre bending.
Oh, it's a genre bending tree.
Like music, you know? Like this is like kind of funk, kind of classical.
It's a little bit Camisipras, a little bit Cypress.
Genre bending.
All right, I'm with that.
I'm really proud of this.
I think that's a good one. I think that's a good work, Alex.
Well done. And in using this term for trees, we are genre bending the term because it's usually used to describe music.
It's meta AF.
God.
As the kids say.
Where is our Webby?
You know, where is it? Yeah, ask. We have a lot of questions to ask.
Don't send them this episode.
No, don't do this one.
Casey, fascinating stuff. I love me some wood talk. We'll call this wood talk part two. How about that? And right after the break, we are going to get into our review of this Cypress, Cedar, Nootka, Alaska, Yellow tree. But we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary. Alex here. Here's a little something about me. I love to be cozy. Coziness is of utmost importance to me, and I am in a constant search for coziness. And that is why we present to you Cozy Earth. Cozy Earth makes luxurious bedding and clothing products. And what do I mean by luxurious? Let me tell you this. I now have Cozy Earth sheets on my bed. I wear a full Cozy Earth sweatsuit to bed. And I have been getting the best sleep of my life. It is quite literally the softest material I've ever put on my body. And my skin is so happy in it. I usually have a little bit of a sensory thing. I don't like things touching my skin. Clothes are tough. But with Cozy Earth, I am treated to superior softness, unparalleled fabric, materials, and weave. This is a real endorsement. It's the most comfortable material to ever grace my birthday suit. And guess what? You deserve this coziness too. So treat yourself to the ultimate in comfort and indulgence with Cozy Earth bedding and sleepwear. And you know what? Completely Arbitrary listeners, a little inside detail here. You all get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. That's TREES for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. Now you go and get cozy.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax. The way car buying should be.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we discussed, man, you know, this thing has so many names, I kind of like forget what to call it.
Honestly, yeah. Whichever you come up with, though, like you said, that word cloud, it's all going to be fine.
Yeah. I'm going to stick with Alaska Yellow Cedar just because out of respect, I should do the Nootka Yellow Cedar.
Me, whatever works.
Or Nootka Cypress.
Yeah.
Anyway, we discussed that tree.
We discussed it.
And we discussed some wood. And now it is time to review this tree. And I think we should give a quick review to wood. I don't know.
Okay, yeah. How do you... And on side wood, what do we think about wood as a general idea?
What are the criteria? We don't know.
We'll figure it out.
Here's how it works. We're going to give some final thoughts on this tree and wood. And then give it a rating, them a rating, of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. Casey.
Alex Croson. All right, Alex, I'll begin.
Yes.
So here's the thing. I love this tree. I have thoughts that, as I discussed wood with myself, I was thinking, okay, what am I going to talk about here? How are we going to approach this? And I came up with an idea, a philosophical idea that we'll talk about at some point.
Wow.
About how to age things. How old is a tree?
Oh.
In a certain sense.
I believe there's a whole science around that.
There is. There's a whole science around it. And I think maybe it's not exactly right.
Oh, you're going to get fucking flamed, dude.
It's going to be awesome. So this tree, the Alaska yellow cedar, the Nootka cypress, I think is a spectacular tree. I don't think it's a great tree in the sense of like, wow, mind blowing. This is a world changing tree.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not going to be the top thing I've ever seen in my life.
It doesn't need to be.
It doesn't need to be. But I would much rather, and I do much rather, see this tree get planted often.
Yeah.
As opposed to its freakish offspring, the Leland cypress.
Yeah.
I find that. And I'm going to stick with that.
Leland, too, is such a nebbish name. It's like,
really?
This weird cousin always has snot running down his face.
Oh, gosh. Leland. I disagree with that.
Oops, do you have a friend named Leland?
I do have a friend. But this is more like a last name. So this is like, it's L-E-Y-L-A-N-D.
Yeah.
So it's a last name, I think, as opposed to a first name.
I understand. Okay.
So if it's, let's say, Mr. Leland is that nebbish cousin that you really much don't enjoy.
Okay.
But your friend Leland, now they rock.
Understood. I'm right. Sorry. I'm sorry to the Lelands.
Wow. We're going to get so many letters. So out in the bush, I love to see this tree because it's kind of a tree that doesn't grow everywhere down here.
Yeah.
You can only find it going up to the top of these, you know, intense hills. And I enjoy that about trees. I enjoy trees that are like, yeah, you wanna hang out? Gotta come to me.
You gotta earn it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So as it goes further north, that is just earning it in and of itself. Like, oh, you live up here. Yeah, me too. Great work. Because, you know, it's way colder. It's pretty intense.
You tolerate Alaska? Hey, so do I.
All right. Well, let's hang out for a bit. So this tree, I think, is great. I want to see more of it. I think this is a tree I could say is underplanted and overplanted at the same time.
Depending on where you are.
Yes, because they're planting it for the wrong reasons. They're planting it because they want a tree that stays small, grows slow, and doesn't do a whole lot.
Oh.
I would rather you plant a big tree that grows fairly reasonably and does a whole lot.
That's pretty disrespectful.
Yeah, but the thing is, when I do see it, Alex, I like it.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm really torn. I think if you plant too many more, my rating's going to quickly fall off a cliff.
Wow.
If you just continue at the normal rate,
yeah,
I'm going to be okay with it.
Okay.
But you're on a knife's edge, mister. So I think I'm going to give this tree, and it's going to sound worse than it actually is, a 7.1.
Okay, that's higher than I thought you were going.
Okay, you're right. Okay, so I'm okay with that.
7.1.
A 7.1. It's not great. It's not amazing. It's pretty cool, but there's way better options.
Yeah.
But this is a fine option, and if you choose it, I still support it. I couldn't go lower than a 7 because I do like it. Every time I see it, my heart flutters, especially in the wild. Because I'm just like, look at it!
Yeah.
There's none of those around here. That's how I feel.
It does seem like a very special thing, especially down here.
Yeah, and I should also note, so the native peoples up in Canada, they have a myth for this tree. There was actually three young girls that were running up the mountain, and they were turned into this tree. And they do that because the inner bark is used to make baskets, and it's some of the finest quality. It's very soft and long.
Wow.
So they said it looked and reminded them of a woman's hair.
Interesting.
So that's where it comes from. So I dig that because it's going up the mountain. Like, in order to get it, you got to go up the mountain and go find those cool trees.
Yeah.
As opposed to staying down in the lowlands where you have western red cedar, also an extremely used tree, but not near as intense to get.
Sure.
Anyway, I don't know if that's super germane, but
I of course it is. I like myths where a human turns into a natural object, you know? That's fun. I feel like there's a lot of them. That's a frequent thing.
It is super frequent. And I was actually thinking about this, a real quick tangent.
Yeah.
Just think about this. Like, a lot of the myths that we talk about, like, you can find it in books today, are all about the myths that came from like the Romans and the Greeks, because those are the things that have slowly come down to us.
Yeah.
But I'd be willing to bet, I mean, I know if you look to other different cultures, they have all these same things, but like we only focus on these ones from the ancient Greeks,
right?
And we don't really focus as much on the ones from the other parts of the world where those other trees didn't exist in the Greek and the Roman times or place.
Yeah.
So we have to say, well, what's the myth of how this tree got here? You know, what's that story? Then you'd have to talk with the people that are there, which are usually the indigenous people from wherever you're at.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe this isn't exactly what you're saying, but I think that comes with, like, you know, I'm more familiar with ancient Greek mythology than I am with Chinook mythology.
Yeah, which is right where you live, right?
And, yeah, and I think that probably is a side effect of genocide, Casey. The United States completely like attempted to erase these people, including their cultures and mythologies.
Yeah, 100%. That's exactly right.
I've never thought of this before, but it's kind of stunning. And maybe we should get into some more Turtle Island indigenous mythology on this show.
Oh yeah, that would be great. Yeah, we've done it quite a bit. We at least used to do it when we covered a lot of the different native trees and kind of their OG uses.
It is one of those things that I feel like we can never do enough of.
Yeah.
But maybe that's the hyper vigilant white man in me.
Yeah. Yes. Well, as long as we do our part.
That's right.
Alex.
Yes.
I gave it a 7.1. What do you think?
This tree of a thousand names, mm-hmm. this hero of a thousand faces, speaking of mythology.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. I like this tree. I think Cooper Sacier is so curious because like every tree we've ever talked about in the Cypress family is like a fucking mess.
They're weird.
Like we nobody can decide on anything taxonomically.
Yeah.
I just think that's really funny. It's like this war zone of binomial naming.
Yeah. That's a fine description.
Where I feel like most other families are very like ordered and have like are like old families, you know, like the Lannisters or like the Starks.
Uh-huh.
And then Cooper Sacier is like the upstart family that's like mostly made of like loose allegiances and cousins and inbred, you know, uncles and shit.
That's so ironic because they're evolutionarily speaking, one of the oldest families.
That's interesting. Yeah. Maybe that has to do with it. Because I'm just purporting here, but maybe it's like these are so old. This family's so old that it doesn't play by like modern rules or something.
Yeah, that's fair. Yes. I don't know. Yeah. I think that's exactly right. That's hitting on the nose.
Perhaps. This tree I have a fondness for. I love any tree that weeps even remotely.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I had no idea.
I like coast redwoods. I'm not like crazy about them. I know that's a little apocryphal. But
apocryphal?
Yeah. But you and I were driving to Selwood recently.
Yeah.
And we passed a big, almost like topiary looking motherfucker. This big weeping tree.
Giant sequoia.
Excuse me. And yeah. And you said, that's a giant sequoia. And it looked nothing like a giant sequoia. It looked like a Tim Burton tree out of Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah.
It was like this weird weeping, like kind of one-sided, you know, like a single, like narrow stem with like a big weeping drape down it.
Yeah.
And it kind of made me fond for those trees. I was like, it's weeping. It does weep. You can cry.
You feel something.
Giant's tears. And I like that. I love a Western hemlock for the same reason.
Really?
I just think a weeping tree is such a cool look and it's kind of stoner-esque and like, it's just unique looking, I think.
Yeah.
So that's mostly what I'm basing my rating on.
All right.
I love any tree that has any sort of mythology around it. Spoiler alert, all of them do.
Nice.
And I'm going to land here. Oh man, I'm really feeling a 7.0, Casey.
7.0.
Yeah.
That's a good average.
Yeah.
All right.
That puts us at what? 7.05. Yeah.
That's good.
That's really good.
All right. Okay.
Nice job. Nice job, Alaska Yellow Cedar.
Right down the middle of the line.
Yeah.
You know what? You're not hurting any direction. There's no pressure. You're just doing your job.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Hey, you know what? This is like a silver medal.
Yeah.
And a pat on the back.
Yeah, exactly. And like, but like a hearty pat on the back.
Yeah.
Not just like a, you know, you tried.
This is the watch that your boss gives you when you retire.
Yeah, there it is.
It's That's okay. Perfect. It's like a $200 watch.
you're fine with it, but it'll take you a couple years before you switch over to it because you really like the watch you already have.
Yeah. It sits in a drawer unused.
There you go. This is it.
That was our review. Oh, Casey, we didn't give a cone score to wood.
It's right. 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. I love wood. Wood is the most useful thing in the world, and it will never cease to be.
I'm right there with you, Case.
All right. Done.
That was our review of wood and the Nootka Cypress, the Alaska Yellow Cedar. Casey, it's time for a completely arbitrary Q&A.
Let's do it, Alex.
As always, I've grabbed this question from our Patreon. If you want to get questions on this podcast, or at least a shot at it, join the Patreon at the Q&A tier. That's Quercus and Alder, $3 a month. And if you don't get your question on a mainline episode, you know we do regular patron-exclusive Q&A episodes.
That's right. Two a month.
That's right. Where you will definitely get your question answered. Casey.
Yes.
I have a question here.
Okay.
From our most royally named fan.
Oh, really?
Chandler Witherington.
Hello, Chandler.
I presume. Chandler asks, I thought this was so interesting, and I think I know the answer, Casey.
Okay.
But I think that it would be great information to pass along to our fungal associates.
All right.
Can you talk about the difference between endemic and native species?
Oh, very good question.
Here's my snap answer, and then I want you to get into it.
Let's do it.
I believe that it is endemic means that it only grows in this place.
Yes.
Natively. An endemic tree is native.
Correct.
But a native tree is not necessarily endemic.
Yeah, that's perfect.
It's like a rectangle square thing.
Yeah, 100% is exactly what that is.
Yeah.
You're spot on. The thing, we talked about this with Michael Kaufman.
That's right.
When we discussed endicism. Indicism. Yeah.
Indicism.
Thank you. The big thing is, there's not a really great definition, you know? There are certain ways you can describe an endemic species as being endemic to a certain spot. Indicism specifically means that it grows in one discrete area and nowhere else.
Right.
How you define that discrete area is kind of the squishy part of it. So in the in that episode where we were talking about the brewer spruce,
That's right, yeah. Up in the Klamath Mountains.
Yeah. So we were saying, well, it's an endemic tree to the Klamath Mountains, but that is, what about like a ponderosa pine? Is it endemic to Western North America?
Right.
And then once you get to this larger area, you're like, well, now that doesn't really count because there's too much variation within your discrete space. So the more discrete and the less variation you have would make it more of an accurate term to say it's endemic. So one mountaintop is a great example. Mountain range.
That's endemic as hell.
Exactly. One island, because then we talked about the koa and how it's endemic to Hawaii.
Right.
So that is a great example of what it means to be endemic. Whereas the ponderosa pine would be native to all these different places with different kind of spaces in between. So it's native in this mountain range, but it's also native over in that mountain range, over in this area of that state, and down in this section of this state, but not necessarily everywhere in between.
Okay.
So if there was a ponderosa pine that speciated over the next several million years, and we had this kind of pine tree that grows here, no longer a ponderosa pine because now it's a different species, on this mountain range, then there's another one on that mountain range, and there's another species on this mountain range, so on and so forth, to all the mountain ranges, then you have an endemic species to every single mountain range, which is just a little bit different than all the other species.
Right.
So that is kind of the big thing. It could be native to all these places, and if it's native to an area, if it's not a discrete enough area, or there's maybe many populations that are not necessarily connected, that's when I would say, yeah, it's native to this area or these areas. but it would be endemic if it was just one area and it's very small. The smaller it is, the more endemic, I think,
okay,
means.
Oh. So, yeah, this is weird. This is a little bit of a gray area, and I don't like it.
Yeah, it really is, yeah.
It's like endemicism is like kind of geographically based. Well, I guess it is geographically based explicitly.
For sure.
But it's also sort of like size based.
Yeah.
Like if there is a species of tree, the only specimen in the world grows in your front yard.
Yeah.
That is like top level endemicism.
Yes.
Endemicism.
That's
right.
Thank you.
But if it's like, you know, it grows over a mountain range that goes over several, like, you know, country borders.
Sure, yeah.
Is that still endemic?
Yeah, if it's endemic to the Alps.
Right.
It's like, well,
the Alps
guess
are huge.
That's fair, but I would say it's just native to the Alps.
Okay.
It grows in these mountains as a habitat, but it's not a very specific, particular kind of habitat. Like the siskiyous, there's a lot of endemic species because it has this certain kind of soil, and it's been there for so long that certain things have grown and adjusted and adapted to this specific soil type.
Sure.
Therefore, they're endemic to this one area because there's no other places that are similar that it would grow even if it could find its way over there.
Yeah.
So with our brewer spruce, it's been growing on that mountaintop this entire time. It's native to this area. It's endemic because it doesn't grow anywhere else, as opposed to a Douglas fir or a ponderosa pine that is growing everywhere else. So it's native to this big region. But is it endemic? Nah, because there's not a discrete space that we can say it only grows here.
Right.
So that would be, I think, the best difference. But I think you're right to say, yeah, this kind of sucks. There's not a real good definition. Is just kind of, if it appears small and discreet enough that you can draw a clean border around it,
mm-hmm.
that I think is what would really put you over the edge.
There you go.
But it's definitely a spectrum.
Also, native species can grow way elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you can have Douglas fir is a great example where you could say that it's endemic to the Western United States or Western North America, but there are species that grow in the high mountains, or there's individual populations, not species, that grow down in Mexico,
right.
grow up in Canada, grow in New Mexico, in little bits in the Rocky Mountains, in little bits in the Cascade Mountains, all the way on the coast. So there's not a very nice, easy space that you can just draw a circle around, because it's also including a bunch of places that it doesn't grow, and you have to draw a gigantic circle to include a thousand different things that are very different.
Thank you, Chandler, for your question. If you've got a question for us, join up on the Patreon. That's patreon.com/arbitrarypod, ArbitraryPod. You can find that link on our Instagram bio, or just go to that website. Patreon is a subscription service for the artists that you love, including Casey and I. You can sign up for a bunch of different tiers at different price levels, and it's a monthly sub. If you join that $3 tier, you can get questions on the podcast. Above that is $5. You get 2 bonus episodes a month about other related topics and trees.
That's right.
Above that, of course, at $10 a month is our Cone of the Month Club, the best way to support the podcast. You get a monthly cone sticker illustrated by a different artist every single month, a different species, sent to your mailbox. We get $10 of your hard-earned money to support the podcast.
Yes.
Above that is Arbitrary Plus, our live stream tier. 2 live streams a month, one with Casey and I and one with just me, playing a tree or nature-themed game, video game. And of course, Casey, above that, at $20 a month, it starts at 20, is our generous admission. If you just want to go above and way beyond for this podcast, that's the place to do it. We appreciate all of your support. Even if you just listen to the podcast, that's pretty great.
That's pretty great. We're so happy you're here.
That's right. Casey Clapp.
Alex Croson, great work today.
Hey, you too.
I hope you know everything there is to know about wood now.
I'm a genius.
Well, that's true.
And gymnosperms are conifers.
Yes.
And angiosperms are broadleafs. I don't think I'll ever forget it, Casey. And that is a character arc. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We will see you next time. Goodbye.
Au revoir. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.